Hello, I'm Jeremy Rivera, your unscripted podcast host. This is the Unscripted Cannabis Podcast, and I'm here with Jeremy Nori, who's going to introduce himself, give us a taste of his expertise, what he's been working on, and his connection to the cannabis world.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you so much for having me. It's my pleasure to be here. And my history in the cannabis world is very deep. I wrote for a magazine. I represented numerous products, won cannabis cups. I've been arrested, home invaded, robbed. I mean, it's been the whole gambit. And like probably the largest fame that I have from it, I was one of the proponents of dabbing early on. One of the cannabis cups I won was for the first dabbing tool that was made available for sale. And from there, I also did all these different events about competitions in cannabis. And then I also had a company called Rig Rags that was kind of like an alternative for stickers or handkerchiefs used for dabbing, cleaning dabbing tools. So yeah, I mean, I have a super deep history in that world. Now I'm a documentary journalist and I've made a few movies about cannabis. So it's been a wild ride.
Let's go with the most recent documentary that you dug into. What was the focus subject matter for that, and what inspired you to make a movie out of it?
Absolutely. The first ones I made were about medical cannabis. It was like very important to me to tell some of those stories of the healers who were at sometimes giving away this medicine to people, and really it was something I could get behind, a kind of concept that's important. One of the best things about cannabis is that it can heal you and help you with your medical problems in various ways, right? So such an important topic. But then the most recent movie is actually about legalization and how the times have changed from those days when those healers could just give away medicine and then they were able to do that because they were selling cannabis and they may be selling it to a medical store or doing it in some sort of way where they were part of this whole industry. Now there's all these guardrails. You can't just sell cannabis and be a healer and give away cannabis. That's not a thing anymore. So it's really dramatically changed the way that the whole world works in cannabis. It's cut out, like say, 95% or more of the people that originally were participating in the industry that got it to where it is now. And, you know, there's still some of us out there fighting the good fight, but the documentary was basically the journey from the original hemp freedom fighters that were trying to legalize cannabis based on its textile uses and all these other helpful things that it could provide for business. And then the medical side came and eclipsed that, and they all became medical activists. And then the medical side opened the door to money. And once the governments saw what was available to them tax-wise or revenue-wise, well, they've consistently changed it, and it looks like we're sitting on the precipice of them completely eliminating everything that we fought for up till now and creating a FDA-approved version of how cannabis is going to be sold in the future. So it's wild times yet again.
Yeah, that came up with my last interview with Len May of EndoDNA, and I was fascinated to hear. I didn't understand the human body and the endocannabinoid system and how those fundamentals work. It's kind of that flip side of that same coin of, hey, there are legit, you know, uses for that. But if you're looking at, you know, the continuity of the journey with the product, I can definitely see, you know, coming from the outside, I lived in California, so it was one of the early adopters of licensing, and how it was before that and after. There's money always changes things. And so you kind of see who sticks to their morals when they've got a wad of cash in their face.
Yeah. I mean, in part of my movie, there's a scene where we were talking to one of the original dispensary owners, and she was explaining that the city wouldn't take her tax money. They tried to give money. They tried to participate in the normal business process that all other businesses would participate in. And they didn't want to know anything about cannabis businesses for a number of years. But then they decided, you know what? We do want all that tax money. And so they hit them with back taxes for all the years that they were in business. She woke up to being a negative billionaire.
Yeah, that's a tough one. And it does seem like there's kind of a double standard of we want your money, but also half of the political side at any given time is like, no, you're bad and evil, and we score points with our constituents by demonizing you or moving the rules. Because I consulted for a for Evergreen SEO, and they were, you know, specific in helping cannabis organizations do SEO and marketing. And I remember, like, there was a moment in time where it's like, oh, everything's going that there's more legalization here, more legalization, where it's flipping everywhere. And then it started like, oh, Delta 8's bad. Oh, well, it's like this in Texas. Oh, it's like this. And then more and more states just kind of added the bureaucratic paperwork to every single aspect of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and let's be honest about what that is. You know, when they don't want your cannabis money, that's because they're getting more money from somebody else that's enforcing these laws against cannabis. And, you know, our biggest opposition has been like the police system and like the legal system and all these people that contribute huge amounts of money to people, yeah, to eliminate these cannabis laws, eliminate progress in cannabis. I mean, alcohol is destructively more dangerous. And how often is there a parallel where like cannabis is mistreated and alcohol is just okay? I mean, even just with like,
yeah,
every cannabis product has to have like a safety cap on, like alcohol doesn't have that. And so there's all these, yes, things that they've kind of singled us out and, oh, you're the bad guys. And kind of all of this other stuff is just lumped in together with that. And as we're kind of doing all these cannabis advocacy things, we're able to get a little bit here and a little bit there. And people are kind of like hedging their bets on whatever it is that they're doing. So the CBD people, we're like, oh, we need better laws so your grandma can go to 7-Eleven and get CBD. And this doesn't get, yeah, you high. But we should, you know, have all these really progressive laws for these hemp products. And then they figured out how to synthesize these hemp products into intoxicating products that do get you high.
Right.
And then they just manipulated, yeah, the laws so that they could sell these intoxicating products. It's no longer about getting CBD to your grandmother. Who cares? Now we just sell our vape pens in 7-Eleven. And then all the weed, yeah, people that had to like lose their whole life trying to sell their products in these dispensaries and like, oh, all these rules, follow all the guidelines. Oh, there's no guidelines for these other ones? They don't have to pay the taxes that we pay? Like, this is nuts. And so you have even cannabis people fighting the cannabis laws. They've separated us now. And because so many people in the cannabis industry are just carpetbag opportunists that don't care about the real important parts of cannabis, they're just going to take the money, whatever, they don't care. Jimmy's going to lose his whole life as long as I got my money, you know? And, right, and it's one of the eye-opening things about being in the cannabis industry is that just like a lot of other businesses, there's so many opportunists and so many problematic things and deception in marketing, mislabeling, how many cannabis products actually pass the testing, how many cannabis products are, you know, just a problem in various ways. And then there's other weird things where they'll be like, oh, well, now you can't have any packaging that's marketed towards children. But then sometimes that kind of falls in a gray area too. And it's just a real mess. And individual states creating their own laws, you know, I would go, yes, from California to Arizona. And unless I had my medical state card from the state of California, like I don't have any medical rights, if just my paperwork from the doctor. This is It was a wild time. And now we have recreational where everybody's just abandoned medical. I've had my medical card for like 25 years or something. And so, you know, we're navigating this path. We all want the same good things. And ultimately, cannabis should just be treated like alcohol. But I don't know if we'll get there.
That's fair enough. I'm curious what your next production, what are you filming now? What's the next story that you're interested in telling?
Well, I'm not working on a cannabis project at the moment. So the other stuff that I do is related to all topics, really. I've made 50 plus documentaries about all kinds of different things. The ones that do a lot of numbers are what I call strange phenomenon. So I'm about to go down and interview some people about experiences with spirits and UFOs and aliens or entities, shall we say. And it's a wild thing. And it's my adult education. I get to just, you know, pursue all these different topics that I'm interested in. And I have like private lectures from the people who are the pinnacle of those studies. So and cannabis wise, there's a couple topics I wouldn't mind tackling next. Some of my friends in the glass industry were sued by Starbucks, and there's a whole story about this product, these glass coffee cups essentially. You know, they were kind of demonized in the industry, and that whole story is a wild story. So I thought about maybe diving into something like that. If somebody wants to fund a cannabis project, come and see me. I might actually be doing a story about the sisters, the cannabis nuns, forget their name, but one of my friends is working with them. So I'm not sure, but it seems like one of those is going to be my next thing.
Well, listeners, if anybody out there wants to get their story out as a documentary, Jeremy Norrie is waiting for you. I'll make sure his information's linked in the show notes. I'm not quite done with him, though, because I do want to delve into that other side. I'm just a curious bird. Tell me, what was the most unexpected story? Because I've done 120 unscripted interviews in the past year, and I can think of several interviews where it just went way differently than I thought it was going to go going into it. So what is the wildest ride you've been on as a documentarian?
Yeah, wow. I mean, you know, I have a book. So if we're talking about the scary stories in my life, and especially in the cannabis world, I would kind of encourage people to read my book. It's all about all those terrible things that happened to me, my home invasions, my robberies, traveling around the country, internationally, doing the Secret Cup, almost getting arrested in Spain by military authorities, canine units getting sent to my events. Like, it was a crazy, crazy time in the cannabis world. And so all those scary stories are in my book, and that's called Jack Moves, A Memoir of the Weed Trade and Dangerous Living. I believe that's the subtitle. But on Barnes & Noble and Amazon, you can find that. But, I mean, wow, what is the wildest story? I mean, I've done some psychedelic medicine stories, and some of the stories that I've been told about that are really incredible. I'm in the Hollywood Disclosure Alliance, and so I go to all these UFO conventions, and I talk to like all the famous UFO people. I was working with Nick Pope last year at Contact in the Desert. It was just me and him going around doing stuff. And so I've definitely heard some crazy, crazy stories. One of the people I know told me she was impregnated by an alien, and the alien removed the baby. I'm currently working on an experiencer story. So, these are wild stories. I have to be respectful to these people, but, the mainstream public isn't going to believe that, you know, you talk to dogs and cats and they talk back to you, or that a dolphin gave you a message about frequency. And that's, you know, your purpose now is sharing this information, or, you communicate with the mantis aliens, or you communicate with the Pleiadians. Or maybe it's heaven and spirits and angels or Jesus or Mary or, you know, I've heard it all. And the thing I have to do when I'm doing these things is I'm a journalist. So I'm trying to tell this story from all perspectives and give it credibility as much as I possibly can. And I push back on a lot of these subjects and I give them the opportunity to kind of answer these questions that people might have. And from there, I take all these little bits of information. And when there's crossover, that's one of the things that really gets to me. So, for example, I was interviewing a couple and they were explaining to me remote viewing and astral projecting. And at one point, they were like, anybody can learn how to do this. It's like basically something that all humans have the ability to do. And, you know, I've pursued that a little bit. I've been able to trigger lucid dreams, but I've never been able to have an astral projection or any of that yet. But the information about what that experience is like has stuck with me. And so I was doing an interview with a yogi master. So this guy does yoga. Mm-hmm. He's not a UFO guy.
Yeah.
And he was explaining to me levitation. And he's like, in yoga, people will say that they can levitate. And then you'll see videos of people hopping around and they'll like take the picture while they're midair. And they're like, oh, look, I'm levitating. And this is fake levitation. And he says to me, what levitation really is you're essentially like your soul, your inner you, like comes out of your body and is above you. And how we've heard of near-death experiences like this. We've heard of a lot of these astral projection type stories sound like that. And some of these psychedelic medicine stories sound like that. And so it starts to give credibility to like, okay, this might not just be a made up story. Something is happening. But what is happening?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. It is interesting to play that theater role, I think, of the early FM and AM radio stations that I'd listened to. And there was a late, I think it was it Art Bell? And then one other that I'd listen, it'd be like 2 o'clock in the morning, he'd be interviewing a guy. Oh, tell me about your experience with the frogmen. And, you know, they'll go and it's challenging because we live in a world that, for a lot of my youth and growing up, very much like enjoyed the skeptics parade of like, let's bring out the scientists and disprove everything. But it was the same time that they were rolling out, you know, the Atkins diet and then saying that this health practice is wrong and that, you know, all fat is bad. And then, you know, they're rolling that back 15, 20 years later, that what we thought was true wasn't exactly true. And I think it comes down to something that my wife often brings up and I have a challenge with of like, nobody can really, really know. And my ADHD personality is like, no, I can definitely know like things. I can come up with an argument. It's like, well, but at the end of the day, like we're, you know, fleshy meat bags and you're riding around in this meat sack and this bone bag and you're experiencing these inputs. So what you know about the world is through those channels, you know, for many people that leads them to like huge, openness to weird stuff and other people, you know, are able to then lump everything into, oh, that's just weird stuff and I'm over here. So tell me about that journalistic side. Is that a practice that you trained in, you grew up in, of holding credibility and space for people's stories that have incredible aspects to them and treating those scenarios with just skepticism when needed, but also like, cause you don't want to be like, oh, this guy was impregnated by Bigfoot. You just can't see it cause it's an invisible Bigfoot. But also, you know, you're saying there are these threads of things that line through that hint at more, you know, it's like so tell me about a little bit of your journey into journalism and how did you How did you figure out, I want to be a storyteller, I want to present people's stories as a documentarian?
Well, that's a great question. And when I was young, I used to tell stories, and a lot of them were made up. And so I would be holding court, you know, and everybody wanted to hear my story. And, you know, that kind of left me as I got older. And, you know, I think there's also part of, I've been deceived before, you know, I've been wrong. And, you know, I've thought things and then learned other things and then changed my opinion. And so I think experiencing all that kind of stuff, trial and error through life, is really what inspired me. And then so many topics, like when I was very young, I grew up very conservatively. Drugs were bad. You know, their religion was all true. I was an altar boy. You know, there was all this stuff. You prayed and then like God was going to take care of you. And I prayed so much and God never took care of me. You know, he never gave me the things that I prayed for. So there starts to be these like, well, you know, what else is it that simple? Is it nothing? You know, you'll kind of, especially when you're getting high, you'll have these like really like deep thoughts and like, what is this all about? Why am I here? You know, what happens after you die? That's a big one. And when you start taking on a lot of these like very serious topics, it makes you really ponder life. And, you know, I've known what it's like to deceive someone, and then I know what it's like to be deceived. And I also know what it's like to have stories made up about me that I know are not true. And, you know, going through all of those things, you kind of come to the conclusion that, you know, life does seem to be a lot of individual experiences. And maybe there is no universal truth. Maybe there's truth for different people. And maybe some things are universally true, but you haven't experienced them. And so they seem unbelievable, right? I mean, even just telling my mom about lucid dreaming, she acts like it's made up because she's never experienced it. But we know that's a real thing. Mainstream science will acknowledge that this is a real thing. And if you ever have had a lucid dream, it is profound. I've had so many, and I even have had ones where I'm like in a boat and I'm like, is this a dream? And then I'm thinking like, this can't be a dream. It's too real to be a dream. And then thinking, well, if it was a dream, I would be laying down. And then slowly you've kind of morphed back into the you that's laying down, and you realize, oh my God, that was a dream. And how real was it? And then there'll also be times when you'll wake up in the dream and there will be rules that don't apply in real life. Like, oh, you can't do certain bad things. It seems like they want you to be a good person in the dream world, or at least me. And, you know, it's really, really interesting to see. To me, it's not more real than reality when I'm in those like crazy spaces. I've also had I've had a lot of crazy experiences in my life. And that's definitely one of the things that makes me open to all of these subjects. Because, you know, you're talking to somebody and they're telling you about how they remote view or how they can communicate with some other thing, and you just dismiss the evidence. Like, that is not, you can't dismiss evidence. So whether you're a skeptic and you're disproving something, one of my friends produces a project called the Y Files on YouTube. And they're the best debunkers I've ever seen about all of this stuff. And his analytics, he's like, oh, the beginning part is the truth, like the believer story. So they tell this believer story and everybody watches it, millions of views. And then when he gets to the part where he says, but is it true? Everyone turns it off. It's like a cliffhanger. Nobody wants to know if the truth that it's debunked. And I think that we have to be honest with ourselves. You have to, you know, take those moments where you're wrong and accept those things and move on from those moments. Right now in the Bigfoot world, there's a documentary that just came out that is basically showing that old Patterson-Gimlin footage and showing them faking it. And to a lot of people, they're like, oh, this is proof that that's fake. But many, many Bigfoot enthusiasts who have not seen the footage are trying to debunk it every day on Facebook or wherever it is. And so, you know, as a journalist, as a documentarian, I'm a truth seeker, right?
Yeah.
I've been involved in all these things. And the goal is to live the truth. I want to help expose true stories to other people and help them. And I want to expose true stories and hope people can stay out of trouble and that kind of stuff too. And, you know, it's all about just being honest and having real progress. You know, if we want to get to a certain goal, you can't have all these little side missteps or, you know, hurdles that keep coming up along the way. You'll never get to where you're trying to go.
I'm kind of struck by a thought of, you know, as you mentioned, conversation on Facebook. We have this new development in the past 20 years, a wild, uncontrolled population subject matter test that's ongoing called social media. And the way that we as humans have adapted this meta concept of society through these controlled platforms and channels that have their own agendas and algorithms behind the scenes, but also these strange ways that we as humans interpret this interface as social interaction. Now, as an independent documentarian, certainly it doesn't hurt to have much bigger viable methods to reach the public than a documentarian in the 1980s, where you had to go through specific film publisher channels and get that out there. I want you to give us your hot take about your hottest take about social media and how it is shaping our society right now.
Absolutely. I'm super deep. I want to make an AI movie. I am both a user of social media and a hater of social media. And so for me, it is marketing, right? This is the way that you reach the world, and it's theoretically cheap and all of this stuff, right? But they don't, you know, the social media platforms are completely unregulated. I have a video that I posted on Instagram that has almost 1 million views. That exact same video is on YouTube, it's on Facebook, it's on another Instagram channel, it's on Twitter, it's on all the different ones. It didn't do any of that on any of those other platforms. So is it a bad video, or why did it not get the views? Well, it's just the people are, you know, not doing the interaction with it, or maybe the platform's not pushing it the way. And now, as a documentarian, you know, it used to be that my competition was other documentaries and maybe mm-hmm. other movies. It wasn't 5-minute YouTube clips made by an autistic child. You know, it wasn't everything, every little bit of nonsense ever in the world. It wasn't everyone on social media just doom scrolling instead of watching something. It wasn't, mm-hmm. I mean, there's 1 million things. There's AI. Now you can go on there and just make porn. And now you just like, what's taking your time? What's taking your time away from watching movies? Because now it's way easier to make movies even. And so there's 1 billion movie makers in addition to all of these other content creators, and I'm competing with them all. And then these streaming platforms, well, in the past, they used to have to buy your project and then they would put it out. And then if it was successful, great. They made money. But if it wasn't successful, they lost money, not me. And so now it's I put out these projects, and if they're successful, then I make money. And so do they. But if they're not successful, I don't make money. And they don't care, because they just, you know, they just essentially delete it. And, you know, it's this weird world. And then let's talk about what these streaming platforms pay. And so Amazon has reduced my pay 5 times. In the first 2 years that we were working with them, it went from 14 cents an hour, which is pathetically low, to now the most I can make from Amazon is 4 cents an hour. And almost everything falls into 1 cent an hour. So that's if you have something phenomenal, you get 4 cents. Otherwise, you're getting nothing. And who's checking? Who's regulating any of this? If YouTube, like we're there on a cannabis podcast, right? So YouTube, this morning I saw a cannabis project, 3.5 million views on YouTube. If I post anything that even shows a cannabis trade show without any cannabis products, I get rejected. I'll have like thousands of views on one video, and then the very next video will be 3 views. And then by that same token, we can put a movie out. It'll get restricted by YouTube. But then if YouTube picks it up for YouTube TV and movies, then it does huge numbers. And so how is this legal? How are they just able to like choose who and what? And like, this is just crazy to me. And it's totally unregulated. I mean, what are we going to strike? Like, this is not going to happen. Like, all of this stuff is just, we're all just on a race to the bottom.
I definitely agree. And I could see that too, because, you know, like it used to be either the partners or consumers, you know, you could withdraw your business from them. But with such a vast society-wide now input on these levels of creation, it's not, there's no such thing as a strike of content creators on these platforms.
One more thing I wanted to mention. Oh, in addition to all of that, these platforms, they don't know either why your videos are doing well. These are just AI computer things that now make or break your projects. It used to be there would be a gatekeeper and you could go to that guy and be like, hey, what can I put in my poster that will be bad? Or what, like, are there rules or guidelines? What are the guardrails of what I'm allowed to do and what I'm not allowed to do? And what do you guys want? You know, and now there's nobody like that. They don't know anything about why these algorithms are doing what they're doing. And you watch all these YouTube videos and people are, this is what you need to do. And you go around and you do all the things and you can have no success doing everything right. And you can have total success doing everything wrong. And so now we just live in this mystery world where nobody knows what's going to happen. And it's just gambling. So every time I make a movie, it's like gambling. It's not like it used to be.
I definitely feel that. I call it the black box effect, because I come from search engine optimization, which, you know, is infamously, you know, you have this box where people can approach it, you put something in, and something comes out the other side. And the people that made the box are very sketchy and very limited about what they say is going to have, what is happening inside the box, and what you should do to put into it to get something out that you like. And, you know, there's a whole, our whole industry is based off of, you know, okay, we're going to approach this both scientifically and artistically and see, okay, if we put these things in, will this come out? Okay, it does seem that way. And then, you know, the more that we figure out what's in the box, then the what's in the box changes. That's specifically true. Because we've started to figure it out. And the more that you figure it out, as soon as you figure it out intentionally, then it resets. And it is this delta, you know, because, you know, again, it comes back to the money play, because I know, you know, like what we call them, black hat SEOs, and their entire world is just whatever it takes to rank and get traffic to my project. It's fine. I don't care if it's exploitative, if I have to hack 1,000 websites, put code on the back end, you know, whatever their terms of service, I don't care. I'm going to do it. And whatever the long-term repercussions, like your domain is blacklisted. Okay, well, I'll just buy different domains. So there's a percentage of my industry that are like that. And they're, you know, and that's true in every industry. You know, in cannabis, you have, you know, the black hatters who, whatever it is, I'm just going to make that money. And it just, at that moment where, you know, the outcome becomes predictable, then they can make so much money that it then starts to flood the system with spam, and then the utility or the outcome of it becomes so bad that it has to change. So it's like this push and pull of like, okay, on the receiving end as a creator, it seems vastly unfair that now it is a pull of the lever. Is this going to work? But it's also like, well, they can't keep the algorithm always exactly the same, because once somebody figures it out, then it's like having the winning, knowing how the winning Powerball number is selected, then it just tilts. So it's this crazy push and pull balance of chaos.
Yeah, when you had physical media, you didn't have people like fake renting videos, or like, you know,
right,
you're not fake going to the movies. Like, these ticket sale numbers and these like rental numbers, these were all like largely authentic. How many people are just bots on these platforms? When I have an advertisement, yes, and I say on Facebook, oh, here's my thing, advertise it to 10,000 profiles, how many of those profiles are real people? How many of those profiles are not, like, and how many of my views are real people? And how many of my comments are real people? And is there any sort of regulation on them at all to, you know, identify this as real? They're selling advertising. They're selling advertising, and they don't know who is actually getting the advertising. And theoretically, you can manipulate these things, right? So, like, let's say you do figure out the hack to get whatever it is that you get, and you have all these views, like there's farms of little phones watching YouTube videos, and you're just getting piles of money from nothing. And how is this better? You know, like in my eyes, it's nuts. And you're absolutely right. You know, they're changing the goalposts all the time. They're like, here's what you're trying to do. Here's what you need to learn. Here's where you're going to work on. And then like, nope, that's no longer a thing. Now the goalpost has changed. You got to entirely change your business. Like, everything is different. What? How? And the cannabis has this same parallel, right? Where like the laws change. And then like, okay, well, now you could sell Delta 8 in stores, and now you can't. Well, maybe you can if you get it from some other place. And then you just kind of. And so I just came from a trade show. There was 1,000 Delta 8 and hemp companies there. And certain states, you could still do it. In certain states, you can't. In certain places, oh, you do it this way. In certain ones, yeah, you do it that way. And then these products, they're like, well, we just changed our little thing, and now we're legal again. So,
yeah. It's definitely challenging. And I guess it's part of the pirate nature of humanity, to try to, you know, optimize for systems, you know, to like, part of survival is just, hey, we got to survive. And so we're going to do that. And it's this, I think it's a Machiavellian thing, maybe like, you know, survival of the fittest on one level, but also the, you know, monkeys don't make poetry, you know, so there is an aspect of like, if we think that we need to be noble, and then we will. And there's kind of an inherent, like, hey, is there a genuine morality within humanity itself, or are we sheerly survivalistic? And, you know, certainly these systems point towards often the chaos. If there is money involved, it will tip towards that. But there's also, you know, as many black hat SEOs as I know, there are as many white hat SEOs who reject explicitly, you know, exploitative practices, and you understand the risk of those, you're aware of them, and you want to do things within guidelines and boundaries to optimize. You know, that's the O in SEO is optimization. So I think there's something about the nature of humanity that does have a concept of at least wanting the morality to exist, and at least wanting for there to be truth and justice and light in the world and mercy, you know, and not just, you know, dog eat dog, you know, and that's reflected in our public media. That's reflected in cyberpunk tropes and, you know, how we think about the future and what's coming up. And I do have hope for humanity myself, but it is, right now, and it may you live in interesting times is certainly the vibe for the moment.
Yeah, definitely. You brought up something else that I was thinking about there. And so as we're kind of moving forward in this world, and are there even going to be streaming platforms in the future? You know, AI is so able to make whatever you want that kind of a lot of us have talked about this, that, you know, currently YouTube is, you know, holding, it's the biggest platform. It's way, way, way bigger than Netflix. And Netflix would probably be the next closest thing. And then there's all the other ones, HBO and all these places. And like, you know, you go to HBO to watch a TV show, or you go to HBO to watch a movie, and like, well, maybe you don't know, you have like certain interests that you're like into. What about the future? What, like, why wouldn't AI could just make a movie with you as the star, and then you can make like whoever you want. All your friends can be in it, and the girl that's your dream girl is your girlfriend. And why would I go to Netflix and watch a movie when I could just go to an AI and say, make me a movie about this, make it kind of like Goodfellas, but it's a sci-fi and all the characters look a little bit like Star Wars, and I'm the main guy, and my girlfriend is Pamela Anderson. Like, you know, like, if you've ever seen some of this stuff, there's AI things that can just change people that you know into doing things that are really risque. And there's a lot of morality in this stuff too, but what's incentivized by these platforms also. So like, for me as a creator, I work really hard on documentaries. I made 3 diet and nutrition documentaries, and all 5 of the people that I interviewed, they didn't agree. They all had different things to say about it, and we made these, you know, awesome movies in my eyes that were really, really accurate representations of what this whole world of nutrition and health is, and how eating can affect your life, and all this stuff. And they did okay. Like, they didn't do great. They did, you know, all right. I've done really important ones that just, you know, bombed, really, really bad numbers. I worked really hard. They're like Netflix level, mainstream level. I just did this cannabis one that I'm so proud of. They get no views. And then I'll make a movie that was like, oh, we'll just do this because whatever. The guy was nice. I'll break every rule. You know, I'll shoot this guy in a hotel room, one camera angle. He's sweating. Like, he speaks English really bad. You can barely understand him. Crushing numbers. So as I do these projects, it's almost routine that anything that I work really hard on, that I make great, something really, really good, that's not going to make money. If I do something terrible and stupid, that makes money. So I'm being incentivized to make dumb crap.
And, yeah.
You know, how many other things that are terrible are being incentivized by money?
Absolutely. It is a challenge because, you know, there's the black box aspect of it. There's also, you know, this force on creativity. You know, it's very much a challenge. There's nobody that I've talked to in those 120 plus interviews that I've done that one aspect of the conversation doesn't turn to the impact of SEO directly on their business, or how they see that it's impacting their clients or how they work. And certainly, you know, I started using Midjourney when it was just kind of spaghetti. You know, like, there's a repeating meme of, you know, Will Smith eating spaghetti. And 3 years ago, it was like, his face is all distorted. And then second year, it kind of looked more impressionistic. And this year, Will Smith walks out onto a rooftop, sits down across the sun, and discusses AI and current society while he's eating spaghetti. And it looks exact, like, indistinguishable from cinema level film shot
by
shot.
Sometimes
it's better. Yeah. And, you know, part of my cynical side says, you know, definitely somebody has models that are even more powerful and more accurate, which is absolutely terrifying from a privacy aspect, you know, and I've had this view since, you know, the Cambridge Analytica scandal. I was in SEO and I knew the level of data exposure and marketing information that at that time was hugely problematic. It was, you know, a years long scandal that they did that. And now it's a daily occurrence of we give up more privacy information just visiting five websites. It's like, oh, you want this cookie pop-up to go away? Click the thing. Well, clicking the thing says that we can monitor what you're doing. You know, and half of the data I use in my industry is politely called, search volume information. More than half of that is directly from spyware installed on thousands of moms' browsers. They have no idea that they're giving up their search information. People can see, you know, it's anonymized, it's third party, but it's not. Like, it's part of, like, it's so invasive. Every part of our existence now seems to be invaded more and more by it. And I don't know what to do about it.
Yeah. I mean, I've gone from being an outlaw in the cannabis industry, and all that was considered evidence. and now I just let them follow me around everywhere I go. And you know, oh, you have access to, have you seen the TikTok one? The TikTok one is like, oh, we have access to any computer in your household, not even just what TikTok's uploaded onto. We just go into your laptop and access whatever we want, or your hard drives, or anything. And, you know, there's part of you that wants results, right? So I need to get the good results. So I have to give them access to my whole life. Otherwise, I'm handicapped and I'm disabled, yeah, in comparison to what other people are capable of doing that are giving them all these permissions. I mean, as I'm moving forward and, you know, trying to be a filmmaker, I have to think of what projects I'm going to make that are going to make me money. And then what stories do I want to tell that are important stories to me that I think need exposure, that people need to know about? And like, not tell those stories. Maybe I lose money on that, but I'm still motivated by my morality as a creator. And you know, we have to have these talks about how much we're going to use AI. And just this morning, we put out a project yesterday. It's doing not great numbers. And, you know, we were discussing, well, maybe we should make some clips with AI. And then, you know, we're creators. Do we really want to say that we're using AI to do those things? And we don't want that. We want to keep doing it ourselves. But ultimately, yeah, if we're not getting results, we're going to have to do that.
Well, if people want to support your project, see what you find is important as messaging, those stories, those silver linings and those threads. As we kind of wrap up here, shout out to your company, your website, anything where people can connect and maybe throw some views on that algorithm and tilt things in your favor.
Yes, yes. Like, theoretically, your comments and your reviews and ratings and all these things matter. So go on to my IMDb page, rate my stuff, review, comment on the videos, like my videos. My website for all the movie stuff is theskyisland.com, and it will take you to the cannabis things, and it gives you access to my social media, my book. The first chapter's free on there. You can read that, get links to that. But I also produce a cannabis event. It's called the American Auto Flower Cup. They have a website, AmericanAutoFlowerCup.com. And we're doing that once a year. Auto flower is a hot topic in the cannabis world right now, and I'm a big believer in that and pushing it for that community. We believe that it's going to take over 80% of the cannabis world, and so that's going to be exciting. And I'm just very, very much a proponent of all the things that I used to love about cannabis and all of that kind of stuff. I'm still open to. The website is the best place to communicate with me if you want to do a cannabis event or you're curious about how any of these things can kind of play out. Maybe you want to make a cannabis movie or a story about something else. Please contact me. I'm very open-minded and I work probably cheaper than any other company in the film industry. So let's make it happen.
Fantastic. Thanks so much for your time, Jeremy.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.